The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away to a deserted place all by yourself and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. They went away in a boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they were hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. He had compassion for them, because they were all like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. When they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, people at once recognized him, and rushed about that whole region and began to bring the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who were touched were healed. The Gospel of the Lord. Normally, when I preach, it's in a two-part system. First, I want to talk to you about the readings themselves, because I think sometimes we have a difficulty in understanding the readings, and some of it has to do with the context, what's happening behind the scenes, where it occurs. Jeremiah is a prophet called by God during one of the most tumultuous times in the history of the Jewish people. By the time Jeremiah is on the scene, which is approximately 626 BC, the northern kingdom, Israel, has been already destroyed by an ancient empire called the Assyrians. It's about 100 years since that destruction. The southern kingdom, called Judah, still exists. Jeremiah is called by God to the southern kingdom. He does refer to the northern kingdom once in a while about their unfaithfulness and the struggles they went through. Jeremiah is probably the most compassionate and one of the most emotional of all the prophets. He actually is out of a priestly family. And to be honest with you, when you read the book of Jeremiah, you'll find he doesn't want to be a prophet, and he actually argues with God about it. And he uses several excuses trying to prove to God, no, I'm not supposed to be doing this. But have you ever noticed that God's going to do what God's going to do? And that's what happens. It's during this time, up until 586 BC, that Jeremiah speaks to the southern kingdom. But in 586, the Babylonian Empire, which had destroyed the Assyrians, the Babylonian Empire wages war against Judah, and they eventually take it over. And it's at that time that you have the captivity of many, I think the estimates are between 30 and 35,000 are hauled away into Babylon, okay? Which was normally the priests, their own prophets, some of the royal house. All were hauled away into Babylon during a period of around 70 years, okay? So think about that for a minute. Now it gives you a little bit of an idea of Jeremiah's. Now, when he uses the term shepherd, he's not at this point, and this is true in the Old Testament as well as in the New Testament. Normally, the term of shepherd does not apply to the farmer. There are some examples of that, but the shepherd is referred to often as the king or a prophet or the priest or some form of leader within the communities of faith. And you'll notice in his writing today, he's referring to the shepherds as being what? Unfaithful. Poor shepherds. And they're actually scattering the flock. Okay? And that's what's happening is the flock loses hope. It also loses its health. The community becomes very sick because the leadership, the shepherds themselves, had led them in ways that they were not to be led to. And that's the context of that first reading. The second reading is from Paul's letter to the church at Ephesus. My wife and I have had the opportunity to travel, and so we enjoy traveling a lot, and we actually have been in Ephesus. Ephesus now is an archaeological site on the west coast of Turkey. It is a huge site. Only 5% of it has been opened up and is opened up to the public. Ephesus at the time of Paul was actually a harbor, and it was one of the most important metropolitan areas throughout all of southern Europe and the Middle East, even to China. Why? It's on the trade routes. And there was trade going back all the way from China through Turkey all the way into Europe. Okay? Back and forth. How do we know that? Archaeologically, they've discovered goods from all these countries buried, okay, because of destruction. Ephesus, though, is primarily made up of Gentiles. What that means is they were not Jewish. Okay? Now, there is a reference in the New Testament that there was a Jewish congregation. Archaeologists at this point have not found it yet, but they have found references to Jewish leaders and in fact, on what's called the Silesius Library, there's actually an image carved of a menorah. So this was a large metropolitan area. It was a harbor. What's interesting is now it's landlocked. It was on a river that actually led from the Aegean Sea up 6 miles, but it filled in with silt. So now it's 6 miles of dirt, and now it's turned to farmland. You have to remember, Paul is a Jew who has converted to the faith, to the Christian faith. But he also studied and understands Judaism very clearly, and that's why you'll notice in the writing, he talks about the circumcised and the uncircumcised. In Judaism, circumcision is the establishment of a covenant between that individual and God. If you didn't know it, one of the oldest festivals in the church year is the circumcision of Jesus. Did you know that? It occurs 8 days after Christmas. The circumcision of Jesus. Why? Because Jewish children, Jewish males, were circumcised 8 days after birth. Okay? So Jews are referred to as the circumcised. Gentiles are referred as the uncircumcised. Why? They had many other religions, okay? And that's why you'll notice in the text it refers to those things. Well, Paul sort of upsets the apple cart because who's he speaking to? He is going into the Jewish communities, but he's also preaching what? He's preaching to the Gentiles. In the public places, wherever people gather. And some of them are coming to the faith. Now, have you ever noticed the church gets into arguments once in a while? Well, that's not brand new. I hope you didn't think that was new. So if you've gotten in an argument recently, don't think you're the first, and you won't be the last. And one of the early issues in the very early church had to do with circumcision. And we see it in Paul's writings. It shows up in Galatians. It shows up in others. Because there were Christians who were Jewish originally and had come to the faith and said, in order for Gentiles to come to the faith, they first have to submit to circumcision. And and then they can be baptized. That was a major argument in the early church about that. And eventually it actually gets to the point that if you'll notice in the book of Acts, there is a chapter in there that talks about what's called the Synod of Jerusalem. And what that simply meant is the leadership of the Christian community gets together. The apostles and the disciples get together, and they had to thrash this out. Paul is called in to talk about it because there's charges being against him because he's saying is, no, we don't have to circumcise. Eventually, there is a decision made, and it's reported in the book of Acts where they're saying is, no, circumcision is not required. That's one of the first issues that occurs in the early church. So when you see in Ephesians this issue over the circumcised and uncircumcised, what's happening here is that Paul's still having to deal with those issues, and what he's saying to them is, whether you're circumcised or uncircumcised, it makes no difference, because you all have what? Christ. That's all that matters. You've all been baptized into Christ. That's what's central. That's what holds us together. That is the answer to all arguments. Have you? Now, I know none of you here are stubborn.
Don't look at me.
Well, I wasn't going to mention any names. But the point of the matter is, have you ever convinced yourself you're the only one that has the right answer? And it would be so much easier in the life we live if everybody else would just realize that. And it's the same way in the communities of faith. And that is that we get together and we have these discussions. And what happens is that we forget something. And what we forget is what's being discussed in Ephesians, and that is we all have one thing in common, and that is most important above all other things. I've been a parish pastor for 47 years. And it's amazing to me when I go into communities of faith as a pastor, I normally hear the histories. I want to hear the histories. I want to hear what's going on. Because why? Something that happened 20 years ago as if it just happened yesterday. Because it's still a hangover. People have not let it go. And in the process, what happens? There's never this what? Unification. Coming together under one. And that's really what Paul's talking about when he's talking in Ephesians about that. I'm going to talk about the gospel text as the sermon today. Grace be unto you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. In the gospel text, if you noticed in the readings today, is the gospel is broken. Do you know it's broken up? You have a section and then there's a space and then there's more verses. Right in the middle of it is the feeding of the 5,000. Okay, and normally that shows up in the church year as it's standalone. Do you know what I mean? So they're doing the beginning, the intro of that, and the end. And why? They have something in common. And what they have in common is that all these people are coming to Jesus at the Sea of Galilee for what? Healing. But they're also coming for more than simply healing. They're coming to be fed, but they're also coming for more than that. They're coming for hope. In my past lives, I've had the honor to be worked in two hospitals, and I was a hospital chaplain in another one. As a hospital chaplain, you have an opportunity to meet people in great exhilaration, excitement when things go well. But at the same time, you talk and are with people who all of a sudden they've gotten word and it's not so well. That there may be a long recovery period, or that this is what I'm going to be living with the rest of my life. I want to tell you a true story. I was called to the sixth floor one day, and I met this lovely older woman. And the staff had called me in and said, I think it'd be helpful if you just sat with her and talked with her, and I did that. It was before she got news about her condition and what was going to be happening. She was going into surgery. We had a word of prayer. She went into surgery. I met her when she came out. Saw her several times. But I never saw the family there. But they were there. They had been there periodically. Just our schedules didn't match. One day she turned to me and she said, Pastor Woody, I feel so lonely. I said, why? My family comes to me and they sit with me and we talk, but we don't talk about what's going on. We don't talk about the message we got from the doctor. We don't talk about how I'm feeling. We don't talk about what the future has in store or what we need to prepare. And I feel so lonely. I feel as if I'm the only one bearing this. I said, well, let me see if I can do something. So I sat down with the family. I asked, called them up, and I said, can we meet just for a little bit? And so we sat down in the chapel area. And I just simply said, I know you folks have been there. You're good, faithful people. But your mom feels as if she's alone. And they said, but we don't want to bother her or make her worry about us. Or we don't want her to get down. I said, first off, we all have down days. Second off, she feels hopeless, as if she's the only one bearing. What I would like to suggest is that you now meet with your mom and talk about what's on your hearts. Maybe to say, Mom, we're going to miss you. So they went upstairs. They went into the room. I was there with them for a few moments. They started talking. They started crying. They'd not done any of that. Again, if we keep strong, everything's better. Really? And they started talking. And they talked for a long time. The next day, I went and saw her. I said, how did it go? She said, I feel so much better. I feel like there's hope. I understand that I may not be here long, but at least I'm not alone. I can bear it because I know my God is with me, but also my family. Why I say this in the gospel text, you'll notice that the criticism is what? Shepherds are not being faithful to the sheep. They're not doing what? Bringing them together. They're scattering them. And you know what? If you're scattered, how do you feel? Alone, separated. Have you ever had that feeling before when something happens in your life and you begin to think you're the only one that's ever had that? Example. I've just been out of the hospital 3 weeks. I was put in twice in emergency, and then I was hospitalized at Loma Linda for 6 days, I think it was. A condition, I don't ever get sick. The only reason I have gray hair is because I'm married. If there's any ruckus in the congregation, it's probably in that pew back there. That's my wife, Susan. Now, I look old, don't I? Tell me about it. Don't lie. Do you think I paid for this color? My wife is older than I am. Isn't it disgusting? And she doesn't have gray hair. I got it all in this family. Anyway, I never get ill. I was very sick. They were actually talking in terms, I remember the doctor telling the ambulance drivers as they were taking me, watch for brain leakage. Because I was bleeding in my joints and underneath the skin. When we face something we've never faced before, it is difficult to bear because we don't know what the future has in store. Whether it's the family, whether it's the staff in the hospital, it's interesting, I've had to be back there and they all know me. Didn't before, but also the patient. So when those people came to Jesus, they're looking more than just simply the laying on of hands or the touching of a cloak and walking away and say, oh good, I'm healed, I feel good, I'm younger than I was before. Isn't that great? They receive far more than that. One is they receive that they now know that God is intimately with them because they were in God's presence. I remember once I had the opportunity to sit down with a couple and they were talking about where is God? And they asked some really important questions, very difficult questions. And to be honest with you, it's difficult to answer them intelligently. And I finally turned to them and I said, the only way I know there is a God is when I look to the crucifixion. Because when I look to the crucifixion, I see what? That someone has borne the iniquities, the sorrows, the pain, the hurt of all of creation and every one of us. And thus I know I'm not alone. And those people came to Jesus and they realized they're not alone. That's why in our churches we have what we call empty crosses or crucifixions or both. Because why? We see the marks of the cross and know that's all for us. To give us hope in the midst of difficult times. And just so, have you ever noticed that sometimes people don't listen? Okay? That's true for all of us. Our God has provided something else for us because we don't always hear everything right and we don't always listen. And yet this day we're so honored a guest comes in our midst. There, the crucified one bearing the marks shares with us his body and blood and it becomes a part of us in our lives to live with us, giving us love and forgiveness and hope now and hope for eternity. Amen.